talking about letting go of noise, that we might enter into stillness and silence by filling up the space with the noise of my voice. But I'm clearly, I have a lot more work to do on my own ego and letting go of my own ego. So I'm going to keep talking. I read a fascinating article this week that talked about speech and talked about how speech has changed in the last generation. That a generation ago, this article suggested in its research that people were more comfortable with pregnant pauses. That people were more comfortable in conversation with silence. There wasn't as urgent a need to, when you say something, to say, well, here's what I think. You know, without any kind of gap, any kind of space. And this article suggested, just following the patterns of speech of many people today, how there's no space. The space is filled with or like, or you know. There's no space. What's happened to the space? You may have heard this before, that music is only music because of the silent spaces between the notes. If you think of a sheet of music, if you did not have that silent space between the notes, what would you have? Rap music. Totally kidding, because there's a lot of rap music that I quite enjoy and quite like. But if you didn't have the silent space between the notes, what would you have? Noise, wouldn't you? I'd like you all right now to, whether it's your grocery list or the Declaration of Independence, whatever, I'd just like you to talk loud and clap at the same time. Everybody right now, just talk out loud, nonsense, say anything. Talk now, go like talk and say out loud. Talk now. But. Okay? Can you feel the difference? The beauty of music, a lot of it is the result of that space and how that space is artistically entered into. Life is relentless, isn't it? That's the word. This week I decided life is relentless. It's this constant kind of demand and pressures and stress and noise and distractions. Have you ever overreacted? Anybody here ever? You know where your reaction is disproportionate to what happened? If you think of a scale from 0 to 10, 0 is calm. 10 is I think we live at 8. Does that ring any bells? I actually think life is so relentless and noisy and demanding that we live at 8. And it doesn't let up. So then our body just decides, oh, it's not going to get any better. I might as well just adapt. This is the way it is. And notice it's a short leap from 8 to 10. How noisy is your life? How noisy is your soul? I wonder at times whether the most important thing we can do as a church, I really believe this, is to figure out a way to cultivate stillness and help people fall in love with silence. The Dalai Lama recently said that if we were able somehow miraculously to teach a generation of third graders across the world how to be still and silent for 10 minutes a day. To tap into a deeper wisdom, a greater compassion. He said if somehow we are able to do that, third graders, it would change the world. Can you imagine if Congress began their sessions with quiet and stillness and silence, dismantling their egos? In today's reading, we're in Lent, we're looking at the words of Jesus from the Sermon on the Mount. And today's reading, Jesus seems to be suggesting to us that if we want to change the world outside of us, maybe the first step is to give attention to the world inside of us. Eddie Hillesum died in Auschwitz in 1943 at the age of 29. All of her diaries and letters were compiled and put together in an extraordinary book I highly recommend called An Interrupted Life. And she says in Auschwitz that perhaps our greatest moral duty is to claim greater areas of peace within ourselves. More and more peace. That we might reflect that peace to others. In Auschwitz, she said, the more you're at peace within yourself, the more peace there will be in this troubled world. But the challenge, you know that space between the notes? The challenge is we fill the space of our life with so much noise, so many distractions, so many demands, so much inner chatter and inner dialogue that it's so hard to be present. And to be present to the presence of God. You see, the presence of God is always present to us. We're the ones that are absent. And Jesus seems to be suggesting in today's reading, we're going to read in a second, he seems to be suggesting that if you don't find a way to go deep into that soul space, you end up living in that noisy space of your ego. And it's in the silence that God seeks to dismantle our ego, that we might actually hear the voice of God. Father Thomas Keating said, here I am talking, what an irony. Silence is God's first language. Everything else is translation. A poor translation. Think about that. To understand today's reading, we need to take a little bit of look at the ancient Jewish and Roman world. In the ancient and Jewish Roman world in the time of Jesus, wealthy people were responsible for public works, for public buildings, for city public baths, for festivals, for feasts. But the expectation was that the recipients of their generosity would publicly heap on the benefactor praise and recognition. So the wealthy people in the time of Jesus who were sharing their generosity to show their power, to gain esteem and approval. In fact, it was the duty of the recipient of generosity to write poems and essays about how great the benefactor is, and to read them in public. And Jesus seems to understand in this reading a spirituality in secret. That we don't kind of love others that we might get approval and esteem and recognition and power and control. But it's about surrendering ourselves to God that we might become love. That our lives actually might become a prayer. So with that background, listen for the words of Jesus for you today. Morgan and Rachel are going to share with us, and Susan, from Matthew 6.
Beware of practicing your piety before others in order to be seen by them, for then you have no reward from your Father in heaven. So whenever you give alms, do not sound a trumpet before you, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, so that they may be praised by others. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward. But when you give alms, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your alms may be done in secret, and your Father, who sees in secret, will reward you.
And whenever you pray, do not be like the hypocrites, for they love to stand and pray in the synagogues and at the street corners so that they may be seen by others. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward. But whenever you pray, go into your room and shut the door and pray to your Father who is in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you. When you are praying, do not heap up empty phrases as the Gentiles do, for they think that they will be heard because of their many words. Do not be like them, for your Father knows what you need before you ask him. Pray then in this way: Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. And forgive us our debts, as we also have forgiven our debtors. And do not bring us to the time of trial, but rescue us from the evil one. For if you forgive others their trespasses, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if you do not forgive others, neither will your Father forgive your trespasses.
And whenever you fast, do not look dismal like the hypocrites, for they disfigure their faces so as to show others that they are fasting. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward. But when you fast, put oil on your head and wash your face, so that your fasting may be seen not only by others, but by your Father who is in secret. And your Father who sees in secret will reward you.
The word of the Lord.
In her book, When the Heart Waits, Sumunk Kig describes what she calls a quickaholic spirituality. She says, I am Sue, I'm a quickaholic. Anybody else? And she talks about this quickaholic spirituality where she says, I demand instant spiritual growth now. None of this waiting. You know, none of this silence, none of this stillness. I want peace, and I want it now. I want patience, and I want it now. She said, you know, I've heard about the fruits of the Spirit. Gentleness, peace, joy. I'd rather go to the store and just buy them rather than have to cultivate the soil of my soul. Plant the seed. Wait for the seed to take root. She says, like most people, I live by a tyranny of the urgent. You know, everything has to be done now, immediately. And tyranny of the urgent, she says, is helpful for me to get things done. But it seems to be at odds with my spirituality. Tyranny of the urgent in my spirituality, she said, I come to God telling God what God needs to do. telling God what the answers should be, telling God how to fix things. When I let go of that, and we just make space for God, it's God who shapes us. It's God who informs us what's important. So to deal with her quickaholic spirituality, she went on a retreat to a monastery. And after morning prayers, she said she went to a pond to the edge of the grass and sat. She tried to be still, listening for the wind sighing over the water. But immediately, almost, her inner chaos rose, that inner chatter. And she thought to herself, I need to be doing something. I need to be moving. I need to be solving everything. So she got up and she went back to the guest quarters. But while she was going to the guest quarters, she noticed a monk with a ski cap pulled over his ears, sitting peacefully under a tree. She described this tranquil peacefulness. And so she sought him out later and she said, how could you be so still? I watched you. You seem to be the perfect picture of waiting in stillness. How can you be so still in the moment? I can't stand to do nothing. And as a monk would do, he rolls his head back with that belly laugh. And he says, my dear, there lies the problem. You bought into the cultural myth that stillness and waiting is doing nothing. And he placed his hands on my shoulders and he peered in my eyes. And he said, I'm going to tell you something, and I hope you hear it, and I hope you hear it down to your toes. Being still and waiting is not doing nothing. It's allowing your soul to grow up. You know, I think we're all meant to be contemplatives. I really do. Now, we're all different, so that might take different shape and in different form, but I think we're all meant to be contemplatives. I think we're all meant to find a quiet, undistracted place deep inside. A place deep inside where we can quiet all of those other voices, including our inner chatter that demands our attention, that we might listen for God's voice. A place deep inside where we might experience that love that we're told casts out fear. A place deep inside where we might see with the heart. We might experience that peace that passes all understanding. I wonder how our spirituality would change if we realize that our spiritual life is not about getting a ticket to heaven. It's not about trying to achieve some perfection at a future date. But it's about union with God. I wonder how our spiritual life would change if we realized it's not about acquiring more and more and more knowledge and somehow proving to others that we are worthy, that we are loving, we are good people. But it's about union with God. And what would change if we realized that union already exists, waiting for us to be awakened to it? God's presence is always present. We're the ones that are absent. Most of the time, I feel like an utter failure at public prayer. I'm not very good at it. And most of the time when I'm praying out loud, I'm worried about the words. And I'm worried about what you will think about the words. So most of the time when I'm praying, I have to confess, I'm thinking about me. My most interesting subject. My spiritual life changed when a respected mentor said, "Just shut up." And listen. Jesus said, don't be like the hypocrites who stand in a synagogue and on the corner and pray, looking for others to see them. When you pray, pray in secret. And in secret, your Father who is in secret will see you in secret and reward you. When you pray, go into your closet and shut the door. Well, what's really interesting in the Middle Eastern time, in the time of Jesus, there weren't closets. There weren't rooms. Everybody lived in one big open space. So those listening to the words of Jesus knew that he wasn't talking about an actual place. Go into the room and shut the door. They knew he was saying, go into that soul space. We sang, "Be still and know that I am God." Psalm 46. Be still, the Hebrew, be still, is Rapha. Cease striving. Be still and know. Cease striving and know. The Hebrew for know is yada. The same word for sexual intimacy. Be still. Cease striving. Quiet the chatter, the ego. Just be. And experience union with God. There isn't anything we have to do. The hardest thing to grasp, God's love, God's presence is not demanded. It's there as a gift. You have a sheet of paper in your bulletin, and we're inviting you to just take a moment to write a prayer. A word, an image, a phrase. They're appearing on our wall over here. I began this Lent with the image on Ash Wednesday. Are you a stick in the mud or a flute? A stick in the mud is full of itself. A flute has been emptied out that it might make beautiful music. As I've held that image throughout the season of Lent, I realize how full of myself I really am. So my prayer is that I might be less of me, less of myself, that I might be emptied to be full of God, that my life might be a prayer, that my life might be part of the music the world needs. Just take a second to write your prayer.